all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey, welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Friday, November 4th. Wrapping up our first week here in the 6 to 8 a.m. slot. We're glad you're here. Coming up this hour, Mark Jacob, a former editor with the Chicago Tribune and Chicago Sun-Times, and we'll talk about how media has been covering this week's events in politics and election races. You can reach us at radio at upnorthnewswi.com. Our phone number is 715-388-7155. You can follow us all day long on social media by searching for Up North News WI or our website, upnorthnewswi.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. One more reminder, this is probably the last day of early in-person absentee voting. There are a few municipalities that will do it again tomorrow, and a few may even do it on Sunday, but each municipal clerk can do it at their own discretion. And so this may be the last day in many communities. So if you want to take advantage of that, do so. Take a little time today. If you know you have it, because you might not have that kind of time, come Tuesday when everybody else is getting in line for those very big races. And as we discussed a minute ago with Carolyn Fiddler, all of those races down ballot. We made a real point during the summer of reminding folks to, you know, don't sleep on these down ballot races. State Attorney General, very important. State Secretary of State could be critically important, especially if Republicans continue to try to undermine democracy itself by undermining the election systems in each of the states. And so you have a choice between Doug LaFollette, the incumbent, who, you know, would preserve the Secretary of State's office as is, versus a Republican candidate in Amy Loudenbeck, who the legislature could then use to give that office immense power rather than leaving it with the bipartisan Wisconsin Elections Commission. And then, of course, further down ballot would be the legislative races. And we know how important those are. Even with gerrymandered maps, it's important in some of those races that are competitive that you make your voices heard. So don't sit those ones out. I wanted to gather, and again, if you're watching the video feed on our Facebook page, again, Up North News WI or Bull Falls Radio, our flagship station in Wausau. But I wanted to show Aaron, who's down at our mothership in Madison, just what 1 week has looked like in the Kreitlow mailbox. And I haven't truly started Christmas shopping yet, but I sure can, because among all the catalogs, we've got Usinger's for sausage, something called Grandin Road. It looks like kind of a Wayfair Christmas for housewares. Never heard of it. Never bought anything from there. Here's Johnson & Murphy. You ever own Johnson & Murphy shoes?
I have not. No,
you haven't. You know why? Because you make a radio paycheck. Nobody can afford those. And yet we're getting that. O&H Kringles, a good company out of Racine.
See that? And I'm fine with getting anytime.
Now, this I am going to use. I've used it before. Going to use it again. Newski's, another good Wisconsin outlet. I've sent meat. Why wouldn't you give the gift of meat for Christmas presents, right?
I think more people should.
Hammacher Schlemmer, or as my wife jokingly calls it, Hammacher Schlemmerker. Let me just pick one page at random here and see if we get something that we really like. Oh, a Pac-Man cocktail arcade table. So, you know, those tabletop versions of the full video game, you can get that for a mere $700.
For that price, I will build my own. Thank you.
Build your own Pac-Man table. K. Jordan is a fashion catalog. Never bought anything from there. Now, here's Duluth Trading. Basically, everything in my closet is from Duluth Trading. So I understand why they send me stuff. I'm, you know.
A friend of mine recommends them very highly.
I am their profit margin. What's that?
A friend of mine recommends specifically their underwear very highly.
Well, it started there, and then turns out a lot of the other clothes I really like too. J. Jill, which I think my wife may have shopped at once, and that's all it takes. Then you get, you know, an endless supply of gifts, or of catalogs rather. Jockey, I'm sure I've never bought Jockey, but again, I think that company's got its roots in Southeast Wisconsin as well. And the last one here is Shutterfly. And now that one I have used. I've used to make like photo coffee mugs and calendars and things like that. And I imagine the profit margin is pretty big on something like that. And they probably make a lot of volume. But I do like doing the photo related presents because, again, that's something unique. You know, nobody else can, you know, do that where they can take a photo that you have and personalize it. In a way that you're never going to get at a store. I don't know. Are you a photo gift person yourself?
Yeah, definitely. I don't always do not necessarily photo gift, but definitely custom gift. My dad has always done a lot of woodworking, so I've picked up a lot of it from him. So sometimes we'll make, I don't know, like 1 year he made record crates for everybody we know who likes vinyl records, things like that. So definitely a fan of more personalized gifts.
Yes. Yeah. And that's where I stand too. Is if I ever get the chance to personalize something, I will. Although now this year, both our daughters recently had birthdays and we ask them every year, what do you want? And they always say, oh, just love or something. And this year, one of them said flippantly, a unicorn. Well, we sent each of them a stuffed unicorn, a unicorn storybook to read to their kids and some unicorn pajamas. So, you know, they were saying, well, good thing I didn't ask for a box of crap this year. So I hope they're more specific next year. Mark Jacob later in the hour. Some more headlines coming up right after this break. This is Up North News Radio. From the Beach Boys Be True to Your School at 7:15 on a Friday morning. This is Up North News Radio. Let's talk about student loan debt for a moment because there are, again, thanks to a flood of campaign cash, primarily by billionaires, we're hearing all about crime. We're led to believe that, you know, all of our cities are on fire, even though prior to political ad season, you heard very little about it. Some of the things that you did hear about on a regular basis included the debate over student loan debt forgiveness, because we have priced education out of reach of most middle American families and consequently have to take on immense loans, often with predatory conditions, often that cannot be refinanced, often that cannot be discharged, even in the case of bankruptcy. In other words, it's gotten to be a real racket. And President Biden wanted to forgive some of that to provide a bit of economic stimulus to folks. It's more than a $1,400 check. It's certainly more than the 6- and 7-digit PPP loans that went to businesses. It's certainly not the same as the monster tax loopholes for billionaires that Ron Johnson created, but it's economic stimulus just the same, that, you know, that the federal government would do that. Well, last month, the administration launched its application for student debt relief. About 26 million Americans have already provided information to be considered for what President Biden calls life-changing relief, and he's not kidding. As of this week, the government has approved 16 million applications for student loan debt relief. But that's not happening because Republican lawsuits are continuing to block that relief. And so as Democratic candidates are pointing out, you know, this is what Democrats are doing. They're fighting to lower education debt, and Republicans want to keep Americans trapped in student debt. It's part of, you know, here Hillary Clinton is on the campaign trail up in New York State for Kathleen Hochul there running for governor. And she notes that, you know, the Republican economic plan is really, one, drive up inflation and the deficit by cutting taxes for the rich. Number two, raise prescription drug costs. Three, increase health care premiums. Four, cut Medicare and Social Security benefits. And five, cancel student loan debt forgiveness. And, you know, objectively, you can't look at that and say that that's not part and parcel of what would happen, you know, with Republicans winning control of Congress. But in terms of that student loan debt forgiveness and the 6- and 7-figure loans to businesses I mentioned, that includes members of Congress. Here's President Biden talking about it.
I don't want to hear from the MAGA Republican officials who sit in Congress and who had hundreds of thousands of dollars, in one case, over a million dollars in pandemic relief loans forgiven. You know, all those folks who had businesses hurt by the pandemic? Well, we stepped in and we helped. Well, those loans are being forgiven. One of them, one of the congressmen, received $2 million in forgiveness for loans. Another one who, you know, she's very well, she speaks a lot about this, Marjorie Taylor Greene and her husband, they got $180,000 in business loans forgiven. And she said, but she said, quote, it's completely unfair for us to forgive student loans for working and middle-class Americans. Representative Vern Buchanan of Florida said our plan was reckless. He got forgiven $2,300,000. You can't make this stuff up. Republican governors wrote me a letter saying that the relief only helps the elite few. Y'all know you're elite? It's nice to know that. I knew you're elite. The elite few. Ted Cruz, a senator from Texas, said, you're a bunch of slackers. He says it's for slackers who don't deserve relief. Who in God's name do these guys think they are?
It's President Biden calling out the hypocrisy of members of Congress getting PPP loans, getting those loans forgiven so that their own businesses can survive the pandemic, but then having the audacity to say that people who went to college and school and furthered themselves and pulled themselves out of maybe a family's cycle of poverty don't deserve assistance.
Yeah, I mean, I know I would personally be very affected by this. I am 23. I just got out of college not too long ago. I didn't actually finish it because, you know, I was going for a music degree during the pandemic, and that doesn't really go together, but that's besides the point. I just accepted that I will have debt for the foreseeable future and probably like never own a house or anything like that. And this could change that, or maybe not, or one of these people could give me a tiny fraction of what they got forgiven and then pay my debt over many times over.
That would be one solution, is if, again, some of these millionaires and billionaires who are being so critical of it, you know, maybe stepped up and supported some other folks to help get them through, you know, higher education. But again, that's that theory of, you know, barren benevolence or, you know, billionaire benevolence, that it's only through the benevolence of people with, you know, 7- and 8-figure wealth that we would then have them support our schools and have them support, you know, education costs and have them provide things that otherwise we can do for ourselves through our tax dollars and through representative government that would make education affordable. And while we still aren't at that point yet, we do have this option here where the part of debt that government took on, you know, to make these loans to students, that they can say, you know, let's instead make this an economic stimulus plan for people that would otherwise be trapped in debt for a very long time. And remember that the public service loan forgiveness went to people that, you know, decided to go to work in some special categories, including the military, nonprofit employees, the Peace Corps, teachers, faculty, and school staff, government employees, police officers, doctors, nurses, and firefighters. All of those occupations and more qualified to apply for some of that student loan relief. Yeah, it didn't include multimillionaire construction executives. It's true. But I think that they'll be all right. And in fact, we know they'll be all right because as we talked about in our last hour, we're learning the degree to which Tim Michels might have more wealth and more connections to companies than he's originally let on. You know, not just the $18 million Connecticut mansion, not just the condominium, penthouse condominium in Manhattan, not just, you know, the compound that he has here in Wisconsin, but apparently limited liability companies, LLCs, that purchase luxury homes all across the country. And so I hope that as, you know, if Tim Michels takes questions this weekend, again, if, I hope that he is asked directly, how many homes do you own? And see if he can answer the question either without difficulty and then accurately. And can he put forward, you know, the figure that would help folks understand if he is really, you know, just your ordinary Wisconsinite who can relate to our problems and would represent us, or if he is like Ron Johnson, just another, you know, multimillionaire who says things to, you know, get people angry or frightened during election time, but then really just looks out for other people like him and not anybody else. Those questions and more are things that need to be asked as we head into this final weekend before Election Day. And then as much as I know you're not going to want to hear this, but once the Election Day is passed, there will be two more elections that people are going to start talking about. No, don't turn your radio off yet. Listen to this. It's important. There'll be two more elections people want to talk about. Obviously, the 2024 presidential election will be affected by whatever happens next Tuesday, because in some states, potentially Wisconsin and others, the results this Tuesday could make it easier for politicians to either outright rig the system or cast more doubts on our election system, or just simply make it easier for state legislatures to either overrule or at least delay and further undermine confidence in election results, because these are things they've said they want to do. Tim Michaels just said that he would think about replacing the Wisconsin Elections Commission with a new commission that would have one member from each congressional district, because that would be more fair. Would it? Let's examine this for a moment. The current Wisconsin Elections Commission, which was set up by Republicans, who got rid of the old Government Accountability Board because it was starting to sniff around some potential misdeeds by Scott Walker. So they got rid of it. They put in this Wisconsin Elections Commission, and they set it up for gridlock. Three Republicans, three Democrats. And they often deadlock, but some, you know, not all the time, but they do, because you set it up with even numbers. But at least it's bipartisan. And at least there are sometimes 5-1 and 6-0 votes on things that just make sense. Because again, at least you have it divided evenly, even if it does mean there could be gridlock. When Michaels talks about setting up something with congressional districts, well, what do we know about the congressional districts in Wisconsin? We know the map is rigged. We know they changed the lines, and that's why in a 50-50 state, Republicans control 5 of the districts, Democrats control 3, and if Derek Van Orden wins in Ron Kind's district next Tuesday, it'll be 6-2. So that new election commission that Tim Michaels would want to set up would have nothing but 6-2 votes on a host of things, where the two representing the 4th and the 2nd districts, Madison and Milwaukee, could shout from the rooftops about things that would be changed about Wisconsin elections that would be suppressing voters, making it harder for the elderly and the sick to vote, making it harder for the military and students to vote, and certainly making the lines a lot longer in big cities. But that would all fall on deaf ears, because the other 6 would say, well, you know, we had a vote, it was 6-2. Because you can rig the maps the way that they are. I've said before, you know, I'm not at all happy that we have gerrymandered congressional lines. But I mean, one of the things on my resume will always be that they are that way because of me, in part, that when I announced I was running for Congress in 2011, you know, they got so scared and thought that they could never protect Sean Duffy that they had to massively reconfigure the 7th district, and therefore massively reconfigure the 3rd district to make both districts look absolutely ridiculous, but in a way that protected Duffy so that he could serve as long as he did. And now Tom Tiffany is there in a predictably red district. But just because they can rig the maps doesn't mean we should allow them to rig the Wisconsin Elections Commission and to further distort the ways that we run elections and to make it harder to vote. Again, we are the only country in the developed world with one political class that is dedicated toward making it harder for eligible citizens to vote. It's not something to be proud of. We'll be back after this break. This is Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
This is Up North News Radio for Friday before Election Day. Before we bring Mark Jacob on live, let me just tell you again why he's one of my favorite people on Twitter, because I had to start laughing out loud. There was one tweet that said, "The Washington Post needs a moratorium on why it matters headlines." And the headlines were, "Why we might not know the results on election night and why it matters. Biden wants to let gig workers be employees. Here's why it matters. Dining Q&A, why it matters, how you dress in a restaurant." But then he puts up a second one with four examples and a third one with four examples. And by the fourth one, I mean, I'm dying that nobody has called that out. And it takes somebody like Mark Jacob, former editor at the Chicago Tribune and Chicago Sun-Times, to say, "Guys, are you seeing what you're doing here? I mean, Mark, I'm glad you saw it and called it out."
Well, the funny thing is about that is all news stories are supposed to do that, right?
Yes.
I mean, if you're writing a news story, you're supposed to include why it matters. So just that's a funny, you know, style in headline writing now at these big outlets. They also do. The Washington Post had one that said, we sent a reporter to the border and here's what he found out. It's like, really? So you're going to write a headline saying that you assigned a reporter to cover a story and he did? That's not a very good headline. So
no.
Yeah, it's a new style, I think. It's a new approach.
It is. And I understand it's about, you know, getting those clicks and calling attention to stories. And, you know, we've talked about it at Up North News. It's like, how do you write an enticing headline and at the same time, you're not writing clickbait? And of course, it's subjective where that line is, but you know, it's same as in TV and everything. It's like, where can you go to attract people? And then where is that line? But boy, when you use the same headline 1,000 times, I think they might have crossed the line.
Yeah.
You mentioned also in a tweet yesterday, and this is where I want to begin in terms of news coverage. You begin with a prediction. It says, "If Democrats do well next week, and I think they will, the news media will talk about a quote-unquote late surge instead of admitting they were wrong all along." And Mark, I'll just kick it off by saying what I've said so many times. This is not a typical midterm cycle.
No, it's not. And to me, the most disappointing thing, you know, being a former journalist, is just seeing how the media mostly have failed to meet the moment. You know, how we're in this kind of crisis stage in democracy in this country, and you have the news media doing the same old crap, you know, "Oh, it's the midterms. Oh, the party out of power gained seats. And oh, look, there's a new poll. Oh, there's a new poll." And by the way, there are a lot of polls that are clearly Republican leaning or Democratic leaning. There just aren't that many polls left that are just, you know, straight up, because polls cost money and fewer news organizations want to pay for them. And also, Pat, polls are not reality. They're not facts. You know, it's more and more difficult to find people. You know, they're on cell phones, they don't pick up their phones. You know, there's polling technology where you develop a panel where you have, you know, you have people who you have set, you know, but that's the kind of technology that a lot of these polls don't use. So, for example, it was New York Times, you know, which is one of the worst offenders. You think it's a great newspaper, they'd be a lot better, but they're not. And there was a poll, I think about a week ago, where they were declaring that there was a 32-point shift in independent women's support for Democrats versus Republicans, toward Republicans, 32-point shift in a month's time. And it's like, that's, you know, come on. I mean, really? We know that didn't happen. So what does that mean about the poll in general? And that was based really on a sample that was very small. So what I'm saying is that the polls aren't right. They're not believable. And they don't really serve us very well. I mean, except they give people things to yak about on cable news. I mean, they're not. Wouldn't it be better? I mean, here's a revolutionary idea I just came up with. How about the news media stop talking about polls, stop talking about who's going to win, who's going to lose, who's going to lose, you know, this whole, they're up, they're down. You know, how about they stop that? And how about they looked at some of the really important issues to people, abortion rights, the economy, let's say, healthcare. How about healthcare? Hey, you know, that matters to people. And actually examine, you know, how the various candidates feel about those issues and what they say they're going to do and what issues are important, what legislation's out there, what's the potential, what's going to happen in Congress next time. What if they wrote about that instead? Wouldn't that be kind of interesting? And maybe the voters might actually be able to vote based on those facts.
Instead of this horse race coverage, which I got to say, I'm at this point where I can't believe watching again the nightly newscast last night that it's more focused on, you know, where Biden, Obama, Trump, Harris and others are going and why they're going there. We already know that's what they do. They travel all around the country the weekend before right. to rally people. And that, again, that doesn't educate the voter at all.
No, it's all tactics. You know, it's all style points. Mm-hmm. And that's and you know, this is really a democracy is a lot more important than that. You know, and so the thing about it is all these members of the mainstream media who you know, want to think they're very smart and important and all that are actually behaving in the most shallow manner possible. They mm-hmm. that they really are. They're dumbing down. They're you know, they're taking. They're assuming their voters are, you know, bored with actual, you know, issues. And when I say issues, you know, I do think that healthcare, people don't talk about that nearly enough, considering how broken our healthcare system is. But beyond the issues about what they're going to vote for, how about issues of character? I mean, people have written a lot about Herschel Walker, but not enough. I mean, considering what a complete, like, flaming train wreck the guy is. And yet the media generally is bored with that. Oh, we reported on that 3 months ago. Well, I'm telling you, there are voters in Georgia who don't realize how bad he is. Mm-hmm. I saw one on the, there was an interview with this woman who's a, you know, just a diehard Republican in Georgia. And she was like saying, well, we know that, you know, Herschel did, you know, this various things and the abortion, you know, that he, you know, he's allegedly opposed to abortion, but, you know, paid for a couple at least. And, you know, and this woman says, well, we've all made mistakes in our youth and we tried. Herschel Walker was 50 years old when he did that. So they all make mistakes, youthful mistakes, you know.
I would love being 58. I'd love if 50 could be racked up as a youthful indiscretion. I guess. I would take that.
Well, being here in the Chicago area, we loved it when, you know, Henry Hyde, who was another kind of, you know, right wing stalwart, you know, and really big on moral issues, when he got caught having an affair and he chalked it up to a youthful indiscretion, and he was 42 at the time that the affair happened, you know. Fair. So it's like, so, you know, it's any excuse you can grab onto. But what I'm saying is that a little fact checking, like, you know, this was not a youthful indiscretion. This was when he was 50. And, you know, with Walker, there's this dynamic where, because of, you know, you can say, well, it's redemption story. It's a great redemption story. He did all these horrible things, but he's not doing them anymore. Well, he wrote a book in the, you know, the 2005, I believe it was, you know, that where he admitted all this stuff, you know, like, you know, threatening to blow his wife's head off and driving around Dallas looking for some guy who hadn't delivered a car on time that he was going to shoot and stuff like that. And so it's cast as a redemption story. But after he wrote the book and said that he had, you know, been treated for his, you know, multiple personalities, after that, like years after that, his ex-girlfriend told police that he had threatened to blow her head off. So it's this redemption story is BS too. It's just not true.
Oh, it's as BS as originalism is for right. Supreme Court justices. Right. You know,
it's, It's this thing that could, that allows you to just kind of twist your argument. You know, wasn't it funny? Kagan was reminding them about originalism, you know, just last week.
Yeah,
they apparently forgot it in another issue. That
no idea what is this originalism of which you speak. Now I know I'm asking to prove a negative here, but I'm going to say it anyway. I haven't seen any indication that changes my mind ever since the Kansas vote. That I haven't seen any. This won't be anything more than what Kansas was. A whole lot of very angry women, quietly angry in many cases. Maybe Republican voting in many cases, who are going to make some kind of a statement on Tuesday. I haven't seen anything to tell me that anger and that motivation to action has subsided.
Yeah, well, if you watch the news media, you'd assume it was, because they're saying, well, it's not an issue anymore, you know, and all this crap. The I think that's one of the things the polls don't measure very well. And I got to believe that a lot of women are still really angry. And, you know, men should be, too. I mean, it's a human rights issue. It's not a women's issue. Come on, let's get real here. And I think that I hope they make their statement at the polls. Things like that are not measured very well. You would think they'd learn from Kansas that this is going to be really close. We don't know which way it's going to go. And it was overwhelming the vote in favor of abortion rights. And which is really not, you know, you can call it abortion rights. You can also call it reproductive rights. You can also call it women's rights to control their own body, which is pretty much what it is, you know. So you know, I think they're not measuring that, you know. And again, I don't know how it's going to turn out.
Right.
I mean, it could be red wave, could be blue wave, could be anything. It's hard to see. And a lot of the races seem to be close if you believe the polls, which I don't. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you hear a lot of sentences that end with, you know, if the polls are right, or sentences that start with if the polls are right. Well, we know they haven't been in the past. We know they've been bad. They've been really wrong before. They might be right here. And the thing about it, Pat, their polls are also all over the place. So they're not all right, you know. So, you know, pick your poll and decide what's going to happen. And there's just a poll yesterday that showed that in some key races, Democrats were gaining. So then you have this new storyline, which is, oh, there's going to be a surge, you know, this instead of the, but mostly you get this unrelenting negativity by Washington Post, New York Times about, well, the Democrats are going to get whacked. And I just don't believe it. I think they're going to do well, very well, some places. I'd like to see them do well in Wisconsin. They certainly have better candidates. I mean, come on, you know, Pat, I mean, do you really want to keep a senator who told you that COVID could be cured by mouthwash, that Listerine had to issue a public statement correcting a U.S. senator about that their product does not cure COVID? I mean, really, do you really want that kind of person in the United States Senate?
Yeah, I shudder at what that answer might be come Tuesday. Mark Jacob, you used to edit page one stories at the Chicago Tribune. So this is a page one question. And I know I'm just putting the ball on the tee, but again, you were right there on page one. How, after the attack on the husband of the Speaker of the House, how does that story end up at the very bottom of page one of the New York Times?
That's a great question. And if that is a broken system, That is a lost newspaper. And you know, the thing about, I subscribe to the New York Times, at least for now I do, but boy, I'm so disappointed in them. So disappointed. Just the way a man comes in looking to murder the House Speaker, who is, you know, second in line after the president to run this country. One of the most powerful politicians in America, obviously. So it's a murder plot. It's an assassination attempt. Mm-hmm. Guy comes in, he fractures the skull of her husband with a hammer, and that's what this is, the bottom right hand side at the below the fold on the New York Times front page. I don't know how you get there. I don't either.
The overcompensation is stunning on this, to try to not look like the liberal media.
Yeah, I guess I can't figure that out. I mean, to me, it's, you know, certainly more important than like 8 stories about Hillary's emails being, you know, above the fold a few years ago. So I just have no explanation. I've been in a lot of page one meetings where we discuss this should go there, this should go here. What's the most important? What are we going to lead with? You know, I've been in those discussions. Yet I cannot explain how you get to an argument or a decision where, you know, where that happens. I don't know. I just don't know. Yeah. It stuns me.
We'll have to leave it at that. And that and more burning questions that we'll do once the election is passed. Mark Jacob, Thanks so much. Good to visit with you again.
All right. See you, Pat.
Have a good weekend. And we'll wrap up our visit here for this week right after this break. You're up north.
Let's go, girls.
Well, here we go. On a Friday, this day in history, Shania Twain's third studio album, Come On Over, was released on this November 4th of 1997, eventually becoming the best-selling country album by a female act. To date, it has sold 40 million copies worldwide, 20 million in the U.S. Man, I Feel Like a Woman, of course, being one of the best-known tracks from there. On this day in 1984, Prince kicked off his Purple Rain tour with a show in Detroit. The opening act, can you guess? It was one Sheila E. with the song written by Prince, The Glamorous Life, which reached number 7 in America. Also, let's see, we have birthdays. Speaking of The Glamorous Life, yes, Barbie, the inventor of the Barbie doll, Ruth Handler. She's also the co-founder of Mattel. She was born on November 4th, 1916, and passed away in 2002 at the age of 85. Let's move up to 1970 now. On this day in music history, David Bowie's third studio album, The Man Who Sold the World, was released again November 4th, 1970. Let's do another birthday here while we listen to that. It's Walter Cronkite's birthday. He was born on this day in 1916. He passed away in 2016. He was a 19-year anchor of the CBS Evening News, covering everything from the Kennedy assassination to Vietnam War to Watergate. I remember watching him night after night after night, especially at the end of the Vietnam War. And he had this map graphic over his shoulder all the time. And each day, it seemed, the map got a little bit more red as the North Vietnamese army made its way, you know, into South Vietnam and eventually won the war. It was one of those visuals that really sticks with me. The other one, of course, is him anchoring all of the moonshots and the rest of the space program and the, you know, the untethered joy that he took in watching America get into space. Well, let's move to the late 1970s now, and let's get mellow with Linda Ronstadt. I love this song so much. This is Ooh Baby Baby, the Smokey Robinson remake from Linda Ronstadt. Her Living in the USA album hit number one on this day in 1978. Speaking of Ooh Baby Baby, there were a lot of people very happy on this day in 2008. That is the day that Barack Obama won the presidential election, becoming the first black president of the U.S. And now let's see, one more birthday in music. 1940. Another guy, I love this guy's music so much, Delbert McClinton. And you're hearing the jam from Why Me from Never Been Rocked Enough. If you do not have the Delbert McClinton album, Never Been Rocked Enough, please go get it. You will not regret it. It's just such a great album to put on anytime that you need just some fantastic blues rock. He is a four-time Grammy winner. He had hit it big with Tell Me About It, a 1992 duet with Tanya Tucker. Four of his albums have been number one on the blues chart. He was also on the pop chart. You might remember a little hit in 1980 called Giving It Up For Your Love. But again, back to the Never Been Rocked Enough album. He had on there that 1992 duo with Bonnie Raitt, Good Man, Good Woman. Again, can't say enough about it. It'd be you would do yourself well to have that album as well. So there's a little look at where we are in history, music history, and birthdays for today. Coming up Monday, we are going to have one busy show for the day before the election. We are going to meet with Ben Wickler, state chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. We are going to talk to Courier Newsroom national correspondent Alan Piper. Now, we have not visited with Alan on the show yet. Alan Piper does video reports for Courier Newsroom. And if you're a social media scroller and you see the video news reports from an outfit called Now This, that's something that he worked on, and he's now doing videos, video explainers for Courier Newsroom. And if you look for Alan Piper, that's A-L-L-A-N. If you look up Alan Piper videos that he's done either at the Up North News site or just for Courier Newsroom in general, these are really good explainers. They really break issues down from the January 6th committee hearings to the large issues that are at play in this election campaign. So we're going to talk a bit to him about the themes that he thinks will be top of the mind for voters as they head into Tuesday's election. And we will visit with 3rd District Congressional candidate Brad Paff, who is running in that Western and Central Wisconsin seat, hoping to succeed the retiring Ron Kind and going up against insurrection adjacent Derek Van Orden, whose ads are the kinds of things that are the reason we should have had a fairness doctrine and an equal time rule, because the claims are so outlandish that they deserve rebuttal time. And it's not like he can be challenged on them, because Derek Van Orden is hiding behind the commercials, refusing to debate, and even refusing just to do, you know, in-depth interviews where he can be asked probing questions about his anti-LGBTQ stances, his tirades, and of course his stance on overturning elections. And as I mentioned before, there's a lot about Tuesday's election that will affect 2024 and the presidential election. I want you to imagine people like Derek Van Orden in control of the House of Representatives 2 years from now. And let's go with the scenario that Joe Biden runs for re-election and defeats either Donald Trump or some other Republican nominee. But again, it's so close that you have troublemakers getting involved that want to somehow gum up the works, or at least, again, cast doubt on the legitimacy so that there cannot be any national unity. Well, look who's going to be in the House of Representatives if that happens, and if Derek Van Orden wins this race. We already have insurrection-adjacent members of Congress from Wisconsin. We have that in Scott Fitzgerald, who facilitated the meeting of fake electors. We have that in Tom Tiffany, who signed on to a Texas lawsuit that sought to overturn your votes, sought to overturn the Wisconsin election results. And of course, we have Ron Johnson, who spreads Russian disinformation about the legitimacy and the accuracy and the safety and security of America's election system. Why do we need another one of those in our congressional delegation? It's enough to have what we have right now. And notice, in no instance, because we're going to be so busy with what's probably going to be an impeachment of Joe Biden, you know, just 6 weeks from now or so, if Republicans were to take control of the House. You notice in all of this, we haven't talked about what would Congress do, what would a Congressman Van Orden do for the 3rd District? Because it wouldn't be a priority. That's why. It would be, again, in that Marjorie Taylor Greene vein of nothing but national talk, nothing but conspiracies, and very little about building up the farms and small businesses of the 3rd Congressional District. It's something that Brad Paff has talked about quite a bit, and we will visit with him come Monday morning as well. Well, that's going to do it for us. So remember, you can follow us on socials at UpNorthNewsWI or UpNorthNewsWI.com. You can follow me, Pat Kreitlow, Up North on Facebook, or Pat Kreitlow on Twitter. All right. Go have fun. Work hard. Play hard. Enjoy the day. And we'll see you next week.
And that's the way it is. Friday.